In 2003, Nike signed 13-year-old Freddie Adu to a seven-figure contract. But Freddie didn't live up to the hype. He has turned down every single documentary project looking closely at the details of his career. Until now.
People are going to look at everything you did because of the hype surrounding your arrival and what they think you can be.
I'm Grant Wall, and this is American Prodigy, Freddie Adu, from Blue Wire Podcasts.
Blue Wire.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup, oh, blocked by James! It's over! Cleveland is a city of champions once again!
The Cleveland Cavaliers select Colin Sexton, Darius Garland.
Here comes Sexton, some rhythm.
And he got it, young ball continues to wear him out!
Do you know what the Cavs fans are calling the Darius Garland, Colin Sexton backcourt?
What?
Sexland.
Oh, that's good.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. With me today is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how's it going, buddy?
It's going good, man. We got a really, really important set of transactions to talk, and I figure you just go ahead and give us 30 minutes on the JaVale deal.
You know what? If we did this last night, I probably could have given you 30 minutes on JaVale. I'm not kidding you. But I was sitting there last week so jealous. One, you, Nam, and Trevor did just a fantastic job with the draft coverage. That was a lot of fun evening. Really, really enjoyed that. So I want to give a big thanks to you guys all for pulling through and doing that. I'm excited, man. We got Okoro. We got my favorite perimeter prospect in the draft. We lost Tristan, which sucks a lot. But the rest of the signings, I mean, this is kind of what we were hoping for with the Cavs, right? Like, the big fear for a lot of Cavs fans going into this offseason was, oh God, the Cavs are going to do a whole bunch of win now moves. Dan Gilbert's going to pressure them to do all these things that are going to bury the young guys, and they're not going to get the minutes they need. And it looks like all of those fears were gone, right? They didn't even draft the win now guy in Obi Toppin.
I don't know if it's everything I could have possibly wanted, but it's certainly acceptable. It's certainly a set of acceptable outcomes, I think. You know, I find myself as kind of Switzerland here where, you know, some people like you are completely thrilled with how the offseason's gone. Some people are absolutely, abjectly miserable. Love you, David. And, you know, I find myself somewhere in the between. You know, I'm very, very sad to see Tristan go. I think it's going to be very, very hard for this team to lose him, both from an on-court and morale perspective. He, by all intents, was the leader for this team. Everyone said he was the vocal leader that, you know, they rallied around, and they don't have that anymore. Instead, they're going to have an Andre Drummond who's probably not thrilled to be there. So that is a knock against the current regime. But you look at drafting Okoro, and I really think that's the only transaction that matters to me. Right. Everything else is kind of, well, that's not fair to say. It's the only transaction that matters in the long term.
Yeah,
trading for JaVale, letting Tristan walk. I think the most optimistic Cavs fan, I guess some people might have wanted him to retire a Cavalier, but I saw his tenure ending in the next couple of years, even if he took a sweetheart deal to stay. So long term, the most important decision they made was who to draft, and I think they drafted the right guy.
Yeah, I agree with that. One thing that I've really enjoyed is kind of now that I know it's Okoro, I've been deep diving into more stuff about him and listening to everything that smart people have to say, because at the end of the day, we're almost aggregators still. We put the aggregation game behind us, but we do rely on a lot of smart people to help inform us. And the fact that he is that kind of hard worker, that you're getting another Sexton or work ethic to rival Sexton, I think that's great for the environment the Cavs are trying to build and the culture they're trying to build. The other thing I just want to clarify, this was not a perfect offseason. I really wanted Tristan back. I would have absolutely loved to have him back. And I think the Cavs are worse off for not having him. I think it's reasonable to assume that he wasn't going to stay in Cleveland for the money he got in Boston. I think you'd probably have to pay a premium to keep him in there. I know friend of the podcast, Evan Damrell, had mentioned he wanted at least 3 years if it was with the Cavs. So I think the money would have been a little more significant. But you know what? With Tristan going, as disappointing as that is, I'm pretty okay with what they did with McGee. You look at some of the options on the market after we lost out on kind of our dream target in Harry Giles. There wasn't a whole lot of upside guys. I thought Taj Gibson might be a really smart signing from a leadership perspective. What I do like with the McGee signing, at least, is I think what he can bring to the court is valuable skills for the young guys to work with. It benefits Sexton and Garland to work with a genuine lob threat in the pick and roll. I don't think he's actually going to impact win losses very much, but having that kind of guy out there to get those reps in the pick and roll is important, because you know Andre Drummond isn't going to do any of that. He's going to pop out to the three-point line. So I think McGee's going to be fun without inflating our wins. I don't think that's going to be a concern with them. So I'm here for the experience. And now that Deli's back, we have someone for him to throw lobs to.
I think that the fun but bad stage of JaVale's career is getting close to being done. I think we're just at the bad stage. I think it's fine.
He's still a block fine, shots and dunks. Yeah.
He's a fine to below average. He's a below average NBA player, which means he's probably an average backup big. Mm-hmm. The team will be worse defensively with him on the floor. But, probably. You know, I mean, it's fine. It's fine. I can't muster a take on trading, opening up space for them and picking up a 2026 second round pick in the process. It's like even a second round pick that's so far out, I can't care about. And Justin, I do think you say this and you're right in this. And no one thinks about this because everyone goes, oh, well, it's a second round pick. It's worthless. And it's the Lakers. So it's probably going to be a late second. Second round picks do not matter. They are press clippings material.
Yeah.
They only exist to be dealt so people can say, well, they got a couple seconds as well. Whether it's 659 or 32, I do not think that people, that organizations care when they trade, when they get them back in trades.
Yeah, I completely agree. Look at the Kevin Porter Jr. deal. One of those picks was not real. The Miami one is so heavily protected. I think it has to either land at like 59 and 60 to convert. Like, it's just not happening. But you hear four second round picks in cash. Like, they get deals completed. And you know what? I'm not buying into kind of the thought, oh, JaVale McGee's an expiring contract. Maybe you get something at the deadline. I'm not buying into that at all. But what I will mention is, as a $4 million expiring, he might be a good throw-in if you're trading a Dante Exum or Kevin Love or Andre Drummond or any other transaction you're doing. Having that kind of $4 million option to slide in for a depth piece, I think maybe that could help you. Maybe
I don't even think it's a depth piece. I think it's just more money and more variable money to match. Like, so much of what the Cavs plan to do, it appears, has built, like, a lot of their, they didn't have a great hand after LeBron left, but it feels like a big thing Kobe's tried to do is pick up expiring contracts to take on bad money for draft capital.
Right.
The Cavs haven't quite been able to do that. And I think in part because of a marketplace that where this was not a good free agent class where people were really looking to dump a ton of money. And two, they took a couple gamble. Like, there are a couple swings that made it harder to take on big money. Like, when you're already paying Kevin Love and Andre what they're paying, it's hard to eat a Nicholas Batum or an Al Horford, especially an Al Horford type contract, which is multi-year.
Right.
And then also just the appetite really hasn't been there. But what they do have now, ideally hoping heading into a 2021 class that is much better, especially if Giannis doesn't re-sign. Cavs, for a litany of reasons, should be hoping Giannis leaves Milwaukee at this point.
Yeah.
But what they have is a lot of weird and disjointed one-year contracts where they can really get you to whatever number you need. You need to dump $18 million, you give them Exum and McGee and maybe, you know, one other body. You need to dump $30 million. Here's Andre. You know, they can pretty much get to any matching salary they need for just about any contract. It's now just a matter of, is the opportunity going to present itself, and how big of how bad of a pill is Dan Gilbert willing to swallow to buy a pick, to buy an asset? Mm-hmm. Because clearly, if you take on bad money, the Oklahoma City Thunder have proved that you can get late firsts. It's just a matter of if those are the kind of assets this Cavs team is looking for. And if not, like, what's the plan? Because they might just have to burn some of these salaries, and that's just part of the game.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good summary of the situation. And, you know, I thought they've made the moves they haven't made, I guess, is what kind of has me encouraged. Like, wasn't that the big fear for people? And I was being a little tongue in cheek earlier when I was talking about they didn't go out and they didn't do all these kind of crazy win now moves or whatever. But like, that was a real concern for some people. And I guess what kind of frustrates me is there just isn't a whole lot of consistency. I find like a whole lot of people said, oh, they're going to draft Obi Toppin and they're going to do a whole bunch of win now moves, and it's just the Cavs being the Cavs, when no activity kind of seems like the smart way to go about it. I thought, shout out to Grade in our Discord, because I think he summed it up really perfectly, is they have a lot of questions on this roster that require minutes to answer. You need to find out what you have in Darius Garland. You need to find out, with Colin Sexton heading into a contract extension next summer, look at the money Fox and Mitchell got and all those guys. He's probably going to want to expect that kind of money, and we need to find out how easy that pill is to swallow. We need to find out what Kevin Porter Jr. is going to be. And whether he can kind of get back on track here. We need to find out what you have in Isaac Okoro. They're going into next offseason with a whole lot of money. And I think when you look at these guys, they're going to get the opportunities to really kind of prove what they have. And assuming you get another high pick, with the East improving the way it has, you're likely getting another high pick. You're going to have the opportunity to make some real roster decisions in next offseason. So I think they're set up pretty well. They've brought in guys, almost everyone they brought in has some defensive reputation, which I think is encouraging. But most of the improvement with this roster has to come internally. And I think the Cavs haven't done anything that's going to get in the way of that development.
So, you know, you look at the standings from last season right now, and the Cavs were hanging out near the bot. They finished last in the conference. But you look at their competitors down in there at the bottom. Atlanta Hawks just spent $100 million next year. Yes. The Pistons, I don't think the Pistons will be any better. Actually, I think they'll be worse. So even though they've spent big, they spent big so terribly that I think they will certainly be competition at the for
you're not pick. Here for point Okafor. You don't think that's going to work out for them?
Not quite, nor point anyone on that team for that matter. The Knicks, I think, are also on the same track where they're really looking like they're going to be bad, barring a Westbrook decision. But you look at the Hornets, you look at the Bulls, you look at the Wizards, all these teams are investing to try to win still. And even if the Cavs want to compete with this roster, I think it's going to be actually very hard for them. And the fact that they didn't make any of these big roster swings is really going to help them even kind of do what we've always said we wanted them to do, which is you don't want to mortgage the future, but you don't want to tank. And I think right now, with the way that the bottom of the East has invested, even if they didn't become great, I think there's going to be a real uphill battle for this team to compete for a playoff spot, unless things go so well with their young guys that we're not crying tears for losing a top three pick. So I think they're really, really well set up. What I'm worried about, I think if there is a concern, if I'm going to play the devil's advocate here, is that reporting indicates, Justin, across multiple outlets, that the Cavs want to be more competitive next year. They want to take a leap. Mm-hmm. And if you're worried about that short-sighted decision, you actually, now wasn't the time to worry about it. The time to worry about it is 20 games into the season if they start 5-15. Yep. And that's where, but honestly, I don't really think there's that much, like, this offseason had so much movement that there's actually a lot of stability in the upper middle class among the player base in the NBA. And I actually don't really know what win now move looks like for the Cavs. So everything's kind of working out if you're a fan with an outlook like me or you.
Right. And I think what you want to see is when you're saying, hey, you got to start making some movements towards the playoffs, you need to improve now, that needs to come internally. And if we don't see that growth out of Sexton, out of Garland, out of KPJ, if Isaac Okoro looks shaky, then okay, if your priority is getting good, you got to make some hard decisions. Like, this is not a season, like, for all the optimism I have, this is not a season that comes with no expectations. This isn't found money. There are some really real decisions that are coming up for the Cavs in the near future, and we need to find out what we have in Garland, what we have in Sexton, and that's only going to be found out with playing time. So these guys need to go out there, and we need to find out what we have. And I think there is a world where they overachieve, but even though I think they actually have enough talent right now to be competitive in games, I don't think they have the experience to close. But let's say in this shortened season, you come out with 27 wins. Like, in my mind, 27 wins and the young guys looking good would be a successful season, because then you say, okay, you're ready to take another step here. We have money to spend. We know what we have. We now know what type of role players to target. We'll know whether or not Colin Sexton has taken a step forward on defense and what possibilities that opens up for the Cavs. I just think that by not spending now and maintaining their flexibility, especially when a whole lot of their kind of quote unquote competitors in the bottom of the East spent a lot of bad money this summer, I do think that they're well positioned to kind of retool on the fly here and continue to build something that's actually sustainable.
Yeah. I mean, I think they're in a good spot. I really do. Or, you know, as good as you can be given the hand they were dealt. Excuse me. I think that ultimately this team has to figure out a few things. They need to figure out what they're going to do with the five long-term, because it certainly doesn't feel like Andre Drummond is going to be that answer. You know, that's where I know Okongwu actually would have made a lot of sense for them. They need to figure out if Darius Garland is someone that is worth investing in and considering a part of the long-term future for this team. And they need to figure out if Colin Sexton is a good stats, bad team guy, or just good at basketball. And I think those three answers, two of those answers can be answered this season. And the third one, luckily, it's at the least important position in basketball right now. So I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're in a great spot.
If I have to rank who this season is most important for, my top three is probably Sexton, Garland, and Kobe Altman. Like, I think by the time free agency wraps up next summer, we need to know exactly what this team is. And I think I've liked the moves he's done from an asset accumulation standpoint. I like the picks they've made in this era. I haven't always loved the Cavs drafting, but I really do believe in the crop of guys that they brought in. And
I'll say this, even if I've been the one that's been a little more critical of Garland,
mm-hmm.
I thought the pick was fine. You know, this isn't one where I was throwing a fit on draft night. So even if he isn't the guy that we hoped he'll be, you know, I think that the decision making has been fairly sound.
Mm-hmm. And part of the criticism for that pick was, hey, this 2020 class is so loaded on guards, but the guards didn't really kind of materialize in the same way. Like, I think
they all suck.
Right. Like, you're not crying because you don't have Cole Anthony. Like, it's not that big of a deal breaker for me. And I really like what Okoro can bring to the table. And I think the Cavs are uniquely suited to bring out the best in him. But I think by the time the roster takes shape next offseason, after you've made the free agent moves, after you've drafted whoever you draft in 2021, you're going to have already made a decision on Andre Drummond. You potentially made a decision on Kevin Love. I think we need to know what the team's identity is. And to me, it's just encouraging that they are practicing what they've preached so far. Like, we have heard from the media that, okay, they want to start being a little more competitive now. They want to win now. They want accountability, which I think is the right way to go. Like they haven't done anything that's going to raise their floor to the point where, hey, this is just a lock to be a playoff team. They need a lot of internal growth to be competitive. And I just think they're in a good situation. They made the pick that makes sense for who they said they want to be. You look at Charles Matthews and Lamar Stevens that they brought in on two-way deals. Those are guys. Matthews.
Those are guys.
Yeah, they were defensive guys.
They're people.
Yeah, they are certainly human beings. But like Matthews was projected to be a first round pick, tore his ACL, and like all he's really known for at Michigan was defense. And Lamar Stevens was another defensive guy. And I'm not going to lump in McGee. I'm not going to go that far.
I was about to say, Justin, take off your shilling cap.
Hey, man, I caught myself. I caught myself right in time. But I do think that they're emphasizing the right things. It makes sense. And I like the process right now. Like some of these guys are going to fail. Like not all of these draft picks they've made are going to pan out. Some of these guys are going to bust. But I like the decision-making process. I think it's been sound to this point.
Here's the biggest thing for Kobe Altman. And I think you're right that he is probably, I think perhaps the person in the organization with the most approve of anyone. And it's because right now he's got a team that had no obligation, that was under no obligation to make any sense. And he now has the very difficult task. Like they have young guys now, they have these quote unquote trade pieces, but they're just kind of a team of that right now. Just a team of mismatched potential assets. And he's got to take that team and convert it into a functional basketball culture. Mm-hmm. And until he does that, I think, you know, there's always that, you know, getting graded on the Chris Grant curve where it's easy to accumulate assets. It's easy to pick young guys. It's easy to stink, but eventually you got to turn it into winning. Like you can only do this for so long. And I think this is really the year where organizationally the Cavs need to start showing that they can be that fun team that's on the rise, that Brooklyn Nets team that wasn't any good, but you go, they play the right way. And they've got some guys that if they just get some star wattage around them, they might be something. Mm-hmm. I think you've seen that. Honestly, I think we saw that with Charlotte last year where that was not a good team. I don't think one iota more talented than the Cavs. But you look at their record and they won 5-6 more games than the Cavs. And that doesn't sound like much. 5-6 games is the difference between 19 wins and like 25. Yeah. And I would love to be knocking on the door 30 wins in the near future with this team. So I don't know. I just think ultimately that's the next step. But you're right. It does have to come with these young guys. And they're going to have to prove that they're good enough to get you there. And the roster is weird. JB Bickerstaff has a very difficult job, but I think that there is a feasible path towards that without, you know, splurging and messing up your present or your future to go chase a present surge.
Yeah. And the thing I like is they do have a lot of young options. Like they're all on the perimeter, right? Like the center position is now a big question mark moving forward. We don't know what that's going to be. Maybe next offseason you throw a big restricted offer at someone like Jared Allen. But for now, we just don't know what the future of that position is. But you look at 1-3, and all of these guys, if JB Bickerstaff wants to do what he did last season, which was, hey, you guys are all getting kind of steady minutes, but if you want to get up to 36 minutes, if you want to close, you're going to have to actually go out there and compete. You're going to have to attempt to do the right things. They can do that. If Garland, Sexton, KPJ, Okoro, Windler, like if any of these guys aren't doing the right things or are trying to do the right things, Bickerstaff has another young player that he can play instead of them. And I think that's a really good kind of place to be because you're able to create accountability while still giving those developmental reps to all the young players. And a question I would love, because you mentioned kind of these teams that missed the playoffs but had an identity that knew what they were. I would love to ask JB Bickerstaff if this team could have one trait that when people look at the Cavs, they say, hey, they are blank. What would you choose that to be? Because I think,
you know, he'd give you some cliche like they play good defense
or they're prepared. Yeah, you know what? That's right. How about this? I wish I was sitting with Bickerstaff and we had a few drinks in us and I could get his honest opinion of what he wants the identity to be for this team.
That's fair. And perhaps he might give you a good answer then. I just think that this team should aspire to be functional. And I know that's a very silly and maybe a bit of a backhanded compliment, but it's not. It's really hard for teams in this stage to turn into teams that have a clear identity on offense and defense. And that's what functional is. That's knowing what you're going to do and doing your best to execute on that. Like, I have no clue what the Cavs were even trying to be under John Beilein.
No.
And nor did he. And he still might not know. He's not coaching the team. I think that's JB's biggest challenge. Like, what are we? What do we do? What's our bread and butter? Because they have players with identities, right? Sexton is a great ISO bucket getter. Garland can pull off the dribble really, really well. Drummond and Love are both pretty solid playmakers from the elbow and can mash on the offensive boards. Like, there are identifiable traits from the players on this team. It's about putting them all together and making one cohesive identity.
I agree. And I think this is the growing pains here, right? Like, if you talk about, hey, the Cavs want to make it back to the playoffs, you can't just pardon me,
bro. We both have frogs in our throat today because I've been choking out a few sentences myself. I don't know what's going on here, man.
You know what? I got maybe I got the COVID. You never know.
Jesus Christ.
I'm just going to take it to the darkest place possible. How about that?
Yeah, that's good.
But yeah, I think this is the growing pain season for the Cavs. You can't just flip a switch and expect to be ready for the playoffs. I've mentioned this before, but they brought in LeBron and Love to Kyrie, Tristan, and whoever else was left. And they still started 19 and 20. Like, they were still below 500. They had so many bad habits to work through. And I think this is the year you do that. I think you work through those habits. You try to win every single game. And as you said, they need to develop an identity. They need to come up with something that's reliable. The nice thing about them becoming a little more reliable in what they're doing is it makes it easier for them to be bet on. And with Bet Online, you can bet on all the Cavs games this year, as well as football, because football's back in swing. You might not be at a game, but you can still be in on the action at Bet Online. Bet Online is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on all their season-opening bonuses today and start wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all their great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at BetOnline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
Well, Justin, as the Cavs have looked to fill out their roster, I'll bet they've been spending a lot of time on Indeed.com, and so have we. 2020 has already reshaped how we work, and it's almost over. Businesses across the globe are challenged to be their most efficient, which means every hire is critical. I really like the way they bolded the copy on this read. Indeed is here to help. Indeed is the number one job site in the world with more total visits than any other job site, according to ComScore. Indeed helps you find quality candidates quickly so you can focus on hiring the person you need to keep your business going. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, you can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. And now, Indeed's new way of matching with candidates instantly delivers a short list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job criteria that you can contact the moment you sponsor a job, making Indeed the only job site that can move as fast as you do. 73% of online job seekers in the U.S. are visiting Indeed each month, according to ComScore total visits. So it's clear Indeed can help you get the quality hire you need. That's why more than 3 million businesses worldwide use Indeed for hiring. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer valid through December 31st. Terms and conditions apply.
Carter, I'm going to be honest. Normally, I read whatever the first ad read is when they send us the email, when the good folks at Blue Wire send us the email. That Indeed one was a little long for me. It was all over the place.
It was really chewing the scenery. I'm gonna peel back the curtain here and show our Periscope viewers what we're dealing with here. Just a lot of like big all capsy words. It's kind of random.
Yeah, there's a lot of subheadings in there too. Like I felt like there was a lot of audibles, and I struggle enough with reading. It was just not going to work out for me. So I made the veteran move of reading first and taking the easier read.
Well, that was I like that you didn't mention this, because I hadn't read it until you were about three quarters of the way through. So that was tough on the spirit, but I got through it.
Look, man, I was setting you up to fail. I wasn't setting you up nice, like the Cavs will be setting up JaVale McGee for all those sweet, sweet lobs.
Yeah, you know the Cavs, big lob guys.
No, Garland throws lobs. KPJ throws some lobs. Sexton, it's good reps for Sexton. You know what the other nice thing is?
Sexton doesn't throw great lobs.
He does not. Do you like how I pivoted to, hey, that'll be a good experience for Sexton? You know what I really like about JaVale McGee, and I think this is an underrated part? You're dealing with contract year Andre Drummond, and everything that he has put out there on social media seems to suggest he's been practicing the wrong things. That's okay. You know what? That's fine. It's one thing to bench him for Tristan Thompson. It's another thing to bench him in a contract year for JaVale McGee. And if that doesn't light a fire under your butt, I don't know what does. I think JaVale McGee, some guys are the human victory cigar. He is the human motivator. When you see that goofy smile walking onto the court, I think you're going to get a little more out of Andre Drummond.
I think that is an optimistic read of the situation, but that is okay. I think we should talk about Tristan Thompson, because again, I have no interest in discussing JaVale McGee and his long-term impact on the Cleveland Cavaliers. I do have interest in discussing. We're pitched a Cavalier that we all love very, very much has gone to the freaking Boston Celtics, which hurts. I think if he goes to like the Pacers, no one's that mad.
Dude, I expected it to be LA or Toronto. Like that was really what I thought. I just ignored everything that had said Boston prior to then. I thought Boston was a more realistic scenario for Drummond in like a Hayward deal, but you look at what Hayward got, and
thank God the Cavs didn't go there.
Yeah, that might explain why that didn't go through there, Carter.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think that it's sad to see him go, but I was surprised by the vitriol. Like our friend David Zavac said, you know, he would have liked to have been able to say that the Cavs offered the most money, but I think that kind of belies like the way contract negotiations work. Like if Tristan came to them right off the bat and said, I want $15 million a year for 3-4 years, the Cavs know that they're not getting there.
Right.
So like, what's the point in offering a dollar more than the Celtics? Like, for a guy that clearly wants a premium to stay on a team that is not a contending team, which is perfectly fair and well-earned after 9 years with the organization. I just don't know what people might have wanted. And I very much dispute the idea that Andre Drummond being on the team had anything to do with the Cavs not raising their proposed price past $9-10 million a year tops.
Right. And we know like, the thing that frustrated me was it seemed like people were just forgetting the order of operations. Like the Cavs were trying to extend him. It was reported at the time that they were offering him basically Larry Nance money, which you're looking at $10-11 million a year, more than he signed with the Boston Celtics. And I think you're right. Like, especially when you're only really getting kind of one side of the story, the Cavs haven't really come out, and I don't expect them to slander Tristan on the way out or talk about the details of the negotiation. Cause that's, it's pointless at this point, right? Like you are going to have to pay a premium to keep him in Cleveland. And I think the Cavs were basically waiting. Like he was still kind of their option A in free agency. And they were hoping as the center market dried up and a lot of centers went, that eventually it was, okay, I'm not really going to get the money that I'm looking for to play on a a good team, a good playoff team, and all of a sudden it's back into that range where they felt comfortable giving him an extension. That didn't happen. He basically got around the money that the Cavs would have been willing to give him, but to play for a good team. And I think as disappointing...
The Cavs knew they weren't going to beat that.
Right, right. And I mean, as disappointing as it is to see him in a Celtics uniform, that's a perfect fit. Like, yeah, he is going to be really, really, really good for them. And you're going to get the annoying Bill Simmons and Ryan Russillo takes of, man, this guy wasn't good for a few years, and all of a sudden he's good again. No, no, no. He's been good for a long time. He really rounded out his game.
He's much better offensively than he was the last time the Cavs were good. I'll say that as well.
And he's someone, we've talked about this before, but he's someone that sticks to what he does well. And I think he's going to work really well there. But to me, it didn't make sense, because the order of operations was they failed to come to a contract extension with Tristan. Then they made the move for Drummond. Like, they brought Drummond in both as an asset play and as an opportunity for the young guys to play with Drummond down the stretch of the season, both to kind of get an evaluation of how he fits with the team and how the young guys play off of somebody like Drummond. That obviously didn't happen with the coronavirus, but you know, I don't think that one had to do with the other, really. Maybe you can pitch more minutes, but it's not like you're going to pitch more wins.
No, I don't think so either. And honestly, the minutes would have been hard to give him with Drummond, with them having a hard time finding Drummond a home. And, you know, I certainly thought that an expiring Andre Drummond would have a little bit more value than he's had clearly on the market. And he might be stuck here all year. And you can't play him, you know, 18 minutes a game because you're giving Tristan.
I got one objection. I made this comparison in the Discord. I said that the Andre Drummond trade saga to me feels like election night, where on election night, everyone was like, hey, this is going to take a week or two to figure out because there's so many mail-in ballots. It's going to take time. What we've said consistently is he's more likely to be moved at the deadline. Sure. Chris Fedor came on the podcast and said, hey, he's more likely to be moved at the deadline. And now that he wasn't moved in the first few days of free agency here, it's got people panicking. And I do think it may end up being difficult to move him, but my opinion on how difficult it's going to be to move him hasn't really changed at this point. I still think there's going to be teams looking to create space or even bring him in for a run down the stretch. But
Justin, let me stop you in your tracks here as you scold me. Mm-hmm. I'm one of the few people that's fine with Andre Drummond being here all year. I feel like I'm the only one in Cavs Twitter who doesn't mind the guy. I'm just saying, if Tristan was still here, it would have been hard to find him 30 minutes, you know, even if you wanted to give it to him. So I just think it makes sense. I think it was time for this partnership to move on. Tristan was ready to move to greener pastures. And sure, the Cavs could have overpaid to keep him, but I think they would have had to overpay with term. I don't think he was interested in one sweetheart, you know, 1 or 2 year deal. And I just don't know if the juice was worth the squeeze at that point. I do want to pivot back off Tristan, back to this actual Cavs roster. Justin, if this team is running a 9-man rotation, who is in it?
That's interesting. So I think if you're running a 9-man rotation, I don't think Okoro is going to start the year, but I think by like February, he's going to be starting. Just kind of based on what I've heard about him, and I'm also an optimist. One. Yeah. So I'm going to go Garland, Sexton, Okoro, Love, Drummond, KPJ, Jetty, Nance, and McGee. I think Windler's your 10th man. I think you might go 10 deep, but I'm cutting Windler out of the equation if I need to make a 9-man rotation because he told me to.
Yeah, this is where it gets tough. I almost think they have to run a 10-man just by extension of where their roster is currently constructed. Though I would consider cutting JaVale out to put Windler in.
Yeah, I think you can do that. I mean, it's not ideal to play Love or Nance at the five, but if it
as opens... a backup five, though, it gets easier.
Exactly. And if it's in the name of opening up developmental minutes for Dylan Windler, like maybe in those minutes you're playing Okoro at the four And that's kind of okay. You got Nance and Okoro that can kind of muscle guys. They're strong. You're missing some size there, but you know what? Maybe you can make up for it. I like where your head's at. I think that could really work.
Yeah, I think there will be minutes found for both Dante Exum and Dylan Windler. And honestly, I almost just wonder if it's going to be like, we can say 9-man rotation and that sounds nice, but part of me just wonders if it's going to be very night by night experience for this Cavs roster, which is hard on people at the end of that rotation, but I don't really see a way. They've got too many guys that they're relatively invested in. So that's kind of the main reason that I almost wonder if, you know, a person like JaVale is just going to be a little bit of the odd man looking out, because the Cavs have no incentive to give the guy minutes other than they need backup 5 minutes.
Right. And I think it's also worth noting that these guys are going to miss time. Like Dante Exum going to miss time. Larry Nance Jr. hasn't proven that he can stay healthy for a full season. Dylan Windler, we don't know if that guy can even get on the damn court. Like, it's that's still kind of a bit of a mystery. Kevin Love isn't going to be playing back-to-backs and might play 50 out of 72 games. Like, there are going to be opportunities for guys. And I think they're well positioned to get guys to go out there and earn those minutes. But it is interesting when you look at this roster. It's a low bar, but you can say, hey, the Cavs realistically have 12 NBA players here, and they, like, you're going to have to find time for these guys.
Yeah, you will. I think it's going to be a real challenge. I think, you know,
like Dotson can score, man. Like, I'm
Dotson only, is a player.
I'm only aware of him because he was a viable streaming option in my fantasy league a little while back when there were some injuries. Like, that guy was going out there.
Degenerate.
He was putting up some points, man. He can at least shoot. He's just another guard that they can go to, which it's nice to have, because that hasn't been the case very often. Like, there were times, especially year one there with Sexton, where, man, it got bleak. There were not a lot of NBA players on that roster.
Yeah, it wasn't. And that's certainly not their problem now. I think they've got to make this ill-fitting puzzle work however they possibly can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the other nice thing, I mentioned this before, and I know this goes contrary to my trademark optimism, but some of these guys aren't going to pan out. Like, I think what we saw with Kevin Porter Jr. over the last week here is deeply disappointing. Like, he's someone that you want to root for, but these are all kind of self-inflicted mistakes, putting yourself in a bad situation. We don't know if Darius Garland's going to work out. And like, the nice thing is, I do think that they have some versatility depending on who rises to the occasion. Like, let's say Garland doesn't work out, but Sexton and Okoro do. Well, maybe you land Cade Cunningham in the draft and you're playing those three together. Like, I think that works, because that's a big playmaking wing to play next to Sexton and a good defensive player in Okoro. I think there's a world where maybe it's Sexton and KPJ, or Garland and KPJ, or Garland and Sexton. Like, I'm still a believer that those two can make it work if Sexton can realize his potential on the defensive end. So on the one hand, you want all these guys to do well. They seem like fun guys to root for, and I'm looking forward to it this season. But the Cavs have some kind of flexibility here, depending on who actually ends up rising to the occasion, which it's a good thing to have. I mean, let's just cross our fingers that they don't all bust, because that makes podcasting a little bit difficult.
Yeah, I mean, we've endured through worse, but man, I would love a fun Cavs season. Even if it's not a good Cavs season, I want a fun one. And while you have managed to convince yourself the last couple were more fun than they were, I remain awake to the reality of what we've watched the last couple of years, which is a pretty disjointed team that with not enough positive momentum. And they've got some continuity now. They've ideally got a coach for the next couple of years that can transition them to their next era, even if he's not the guy for the era, though there's no guarantee of that. And it's kind of nut up or shut up time on becoming a competent franchise in the wake of post LeBron. I say it all the time, and I'm just going to be my fifth David Zavac reference of the podcast. Love you, David. But he always says the Cavs are going to have to find a way to have a positive identity that does not involve LeBron James. Starts now.
Yeah, it really does. And you know, it is funny to hear just and I know Trae Young's a big part of this, but it's funny to hear people say just how much further Atlanta is when they were really just as bad as the Cavs last year. Like they were really, really bad. And they went out, they spent probably a little more money than I'd be comfortable with. Like, I think they're going to be fun next season, but from an analyst standpoint, it makes me a little bit nervous. Like they're going all in pretty soon.
Nervous. They're going to fall apart. There's a joke team and they're going to be terrible.
I mean, you could be right. You absolutely could be right. But
I think that team's going to suck.
But like, I think the Cavs have a realistic possibility to be further ahead than Atlanta was going into this offseason, next offseason. I think they have the ability to build a bit of an identity. And you know what? This season isn't going to be it for everybody. You mentioned before how the last couple seasons have been tough. And if you're in this because you like basketball, you like watching guys compete on a night-to-night basis and kind of figure out what these young guys are becoming, and you're interested in that growth process, it's going to be fun. If you want playoffs, or if you need to be a fan of a contending team to enjoy basketball, hey, this isn't going to be for you. This is not your year. But I do think that, like I said before, I think the best that I could realistically hope for is 27 wins. Like that to me in a shortened season would be a lot of fun. Like I think if they get to 27 wins because the young guys are the main part of that push, I think you're in a position to evaluate what you need around those young guys moving forward.
Couldn't agree more, Justin.
And on that note, we might as well wrap this thing up. You guys can all go to bed thinking of JaVale McGee lobs, just, you know, falling asleep, counting dunks from JaVale McGee. Delly to McGee lobs are going to be funny. I don't ever want to see them. I don't ever want to see one because I don't want those two on the court at the same time. And if they are, it means something has gone poorly. But when it happens, I'm here for it. But on that note, we'll wrap things up. I want to thank all of our listeners for supporting us. Again, big thank you to Carter, Trevor, and Nom for filling in with the draft last week. That was a lot of fun to listen to. A week off and I'm already a little bit rusty, Carter. You just hate to see that. It's the importance of reps. That's why you don't bring in a vet to take away reps from a developing prospect. But I want to thank our listeners as well. You guys are amazing with all your support. We're almost through the longest offseason of all time. And the fact that you guys have stuck around really does mean a lot. If you want to support us, you can do so by leaving a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. And if you want to be part of our exclusive Discord chat, you can send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Big thanks to Carter. Thanks to all our listeners. Stay safe out there. And until next time, go Cavs.